Welcome to the Griot Journal's Coming Home podcast. Your voice truly matters here. On this podcast, Dr. Marianne Jefferson seamlessly weaves your invaluable feedback, questions, and stories with her own unique insights. Join us on a journey that's often humorous, yet always fulfilling, as we're accompanied by a diverse range of guests and experts. Together, we'll dive deep into the realms of philosophy, society, culture, relationships, and personal growth. If you're ready to set out on a path of self-discovery and nurture deeper connections, you're in the right place at the right time. And in case you haven't heard it in a while, from our hearts to yours, welcome home.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Griot Journal's Welcome Home podcast. I am your host, Dr. Marianne Jefferson, better known to you as MJ. Hope everyone's doing okay after the holiday and looking forward to the end of the year and to starting a brand new journey in 2024. I can't believe how fast this year has gone. Well, many of you may be wondering about my absence from the podcast, and I have so much to tell you about the past few weeks and even the past year. We're going to talk a little bit about health matters today, health matters specifically to the parathyroid and the disease called parathyroidism. This disease has touched my life personally, and in today's discussion, we're going to talk about what it is, talk a little bit about who is impacted, and healthcare disparities. And I know that that's a buzzword or phrase, if you will, that has been prevalent a lot in the news and in discussions, circles of discussion. But I think if we are true to ourselves, this really still is a very novice term, meaning that even though we're hearing it a lot, we haven't really heard it a lot over the years. Relatively new. And so that when we are talking about certain topics in the health field, we may still be a little fuzzy on how it links to certain populations, how we are personally impacted. And that makes a difference when we're thinking about diseases and how long they have been around and researched. But in our own personal communities, that is to say, gender-specific, age-specific, race, ethnicity-specific, we may not be having those conversations enough. Indeed, there are certain circles that we have come to trust in the health field, doctors, nurses, educators of the like, that we expect information from so that we can be aware, because we don't know what we don't know. So we don't go looking for certain information. We trust others, the news media, traditional and independent journalists, to bring us news, to keep us in the know. But there are some times when we don't get that information. And so we are going through our lives until we reach a place where we experience a crisis. And it's that crisis that brings us to a place to ask more questions. And it's those questions that sometimes we are informed of as we go through research and hear things here and there. My journey with hyperparathyroidism really began years before I even knew what the disease was called and how it was impacting me. I had symptoms, but they were so general and seemed to be so disconnected to anything specific. I had no idea what was happening to me, but I knew that something indeed was happening. Hyperparathyroidism is a disease that is affected by everyone. There's no nationality that isn't impacted. Most of the research says that people are diagnosed in their late 50s and 60s. Recently, I had parathyroid surgery, parathyroidectomy. Now, if you're thinking thyroid, you're in the right neighborhood. The parathyroid is connected to the thyroid, but they have totally different functions. According to the NIH, primary hyperparathyroidism is a disorder of the parathyroid glands, four pea-sized glands located on or near the thyroid gland in the neck. So it sits right behind the thyroid. It's a butterfly-shaped organ, and on each end of the organ, there sits, as it would describe, a pea-sized gland. It's really the size of a grain of rice. But sometimes things go really wrong, and one or more of those glands is affected by what's called an adenoma. An adenoma doesn't have to be cancerous. Adenomas or tumors can be benign, and indeed, most of the cases of hyperparathyroidism and the affected gland are benign. There's no cancer present, but there can be cancer there. And as the adenoma or tumor grows inside, it begins to impact nearly everything in your body, as was the case with me. Primary means that this disorder begins in the parathyroid gland rather than resulting from another health problem such as kidney failure. In those instances, they describe parathyroidism in terms of secondary and tertiary. Today, we're going to talk about primary hyperthyroidism. That's the disease that I have. We'll do a couple of segments to cover the secondary and tertiary hyperparathyroidism later. But today, we want to focus on primary hyperthyroidism, those symptoms, how it's diagnosed, the impact that we experience, and a little bit about the disparities and why that exists and what we can do to further the discussion on hyperparathyroidism, especially in lower socioeconomic communities and in particular in the Black community. So in primary parathyroidism, when it is overactive, the gland makes too much parathyroid hormone. Too much PTH, as it's called, causes calcium levels in your blood to rise too high. And that can lead to health problems such as bone thinning, kidney stones. But those aren't the only thing. In my own personal experience, one of the first things that I experienced was a great deal of fatigue. In fact, not only the fatigue, but bone pain. I mean, searing pain deep in my bones. I experienced insomnia. I experienced increase in frequency of urination. I experienced irritation and agitation, mood changes that would not otherwise be explained. Yes, stress is very natural in what I do for a living. I have a husband also who received a kidney transplant last December and had been on dialysis for 10 years, nearly 11 years. So yes, there was a lot of stress. But how do we explain the nausea, the vomiting? How do we explain the stomach pains that never go away? How do we explain the heart palpitations and the vision changes? So many things. And you might be saying to yourself right now, wow, that's a lot. Well, it is. When you're emotionally up and down, in and out, and back and forth, when you see a doctor and tell them what these symptoms are, they're going to want to prescribe you something for anxiety and something for depression, agitation. And indeed they did. You may also experience high blood pressure. You may experience high cholesterol or even high glucose levels. Now, when you've already been diagnosed with diabetes or high blood pressure, you probably are more likely to get a diagnosis of metabolic disease. And that's where you have a cluster of things going on, like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and high glucose levels, which are associated with diabetes. When this happens, we tend to accept what the doctor says. You have metabolic disorder. Here, take this pill for high blood pressure. You have diabetes. Here, take this pill to get your glucose down. Or even worse, take this insulin to affect your glucose levels. Your sugar is too high. Or take these blood pressure medicines to get your blood pressure regulated. But they never ask why. Why are these numbers this way? They assume that if you have a history in your family of high blood pressure, if you are overweight, if you are emotionally disturbed, that is to say, you keep coming in talking about that you can't regulate your anxiety, that you're having heart palpitations, they may diagnose you with things other than what's actually going on, because they took this history and they've determined that when you come in here, like other people that come in with similar symptomology, and you are in a certain class, that is to say, African-American, Black, if you are European or even Hispanic, that because they see these things often in these communities, that this must be what it is. But is that always the case? What I learned in my research was not because my doctor handed me some information and told me, I think we should look into this. It was rather because she didn't hand me information and say, let's work through this. Let's figure this out. In 2016, I had a whole body scan. I said that I wasn't going to do this. And people at the church thought, you know, we're doing this. We do this normally. And it's a lot of information with which to take to the doctor and use it as a roadmap to help us. These were older ladies, and I couldn't imagine what that scan was going to show me. But what it did notice was that there were, appeared to be at least, two nodules on my thyroid. I took that to my endocrinologist at the time, and she said, yeah, that thank you for bringing this in, but it's too small. The insurance won't do anything about it. We need to wait. At the same time, my calcium levels had increased. They were around between 9.4 and 10.0. And then from 10 points to 10.5 or so, but they stayed pretty high. What's causing this, doctor? I would ask. And she said, we don't know. We'll keep a watch on it. And so sometimes we were checking it and sometimes we weren't. It wasn't because the tests cost more. The test cost what it was. I had to pay out of pocket to go to labs in the community unless they drew labs in the office. And the cost was what it was. Was the cost insurmountable? Was it difficult to pay? Well, it was definitely not something that I looked forward to paying for, because it was always accompanied by other tests, but none really associated with a particular ailment or disease. They were listening to what I was explaining regarding my symptoms, and because my symptoms were all over the place, I didn't really fit into a class. And so time passed. I started seeing another endocrinologist, and he too mentioned, hey, your calcium levels are up. You must have a bleed in your system. And so I was referred to a GI doctor. And he noticed that I had acid reflux. And indeed, in 1998, I had what's called a funduplication, a Nissen wrap, where they wrap your stomach around your esophagus to keep the acid from coming up and disturbing your, or my system, if you will, my esophagus, my throat. It was actually pretty bad, very bad, so bad that I had to have a surgery. And then the surgery was ineffectual. I'd say in less than a year, it had come undone. So I was taking Nexium. GERD is also one of the symptoms that people experience with hyperparathyroidism. GERD also causes pain in the stomach. So if you're having this pain and you've had the surgery, you're probably likely to say, well, the pain is from the surgery, or the pain is from scar tissue from the surgery. But my surgery was laparoscopic, so could it really be associated with scar tissue in my stomach, or could it be something else? Well, the GI doctor found no bleed. In fact, I was sent back to him no less than 3 times. And finally, he said, something else is going on. You have no bleed anywhere that I could find. So what do you do? I just felt like once I was told that I had a metabolic disorder, that that's all there was, until the symptoms gradually got worse.
As we conclude this episode of the GRIO Journals Coming Home podcast, we extend our profound appreciation for your presence in our community. Your stories and feedback are at the heart of what we do here. We'll be back soon with more captivating discussions, expert insights, and inspiring storytelling and expert conversations. If you found today's episode insightful, we invite you to consider sharing it with your network and leaving us a review. To learn more about the GRIO Journal, visit warriorspurse.com. Until next time, from Dr. J and the team, thank you. We hope your week is filled with peace and balance.